bubble.
Good evening and welcome to Burst of All live on CamFM. I'm Michael Quintario.
And I'm CJ Donnelly.
And we're going to be here talking about the week's more unusual news stories as we all the way to about 6 p.m. And we're going to start with what seems to be traditional for the show at the moment. We've got a cute animal story.
Well, yeah, cute animal stories range back to the invention of the internet. And what we have here is a problem with residents in the as-yet-unfinished Shard building leaving their bins unattended. And their bins have apparently managed to attract some wild foxes, which have come in and started knocking them over and eating things.
And now one of the foxes has actually been found at the top of the Shard, which is the UK's tallest skyscraper. It actually just took over Canary Wharf as the highest tower block last year.
It's actually Europe's tallest, or it will be when it's finished.
So one high fox with, as I gather, pretty much a penthouse view over London.
Well, foxes can smell unattended rubbish from up to 200 fathoms or up to 700 metres above sea height or below, irrespectively. So it's really their own fault. Maybe the workmen had sandwich wrappers which they weren't properly disposing of. But it's exactly what you'd expect in a skyscraper of this type.
Yeah, they did actually managed to capture the fox and release it outside the skyscraper, at which point he kind of apparently took one look at it and decided that he wasn't going up that again.
What I especially liked about that part is that they released the fox in some other part of London. So obviously when you try and repatriate an animal, you look for its natural habitat. But this was an urban fox, and so they captured it, had to drive to a suburb and let the fox go on some, well, poor resident's street. I would be quite unhappy if I realised that they were repatriating foxes to my street. They're a nuisance.
Well, in that case, you just have to make sure that your bins are such designs so they can't be knocked over and they can't be...
Well, sure, but what if my next-door neighbour has horrible bins? How can I get rid of them? I mean, the neighbour, not the bins.
I was wondering, well, you can probably get rid of all of them. You have to speak to the council about that, but that's a problem regardless of whether or not there are foxes about, surely.
Maybe I should move to a skyscraper.
Yeah, then the vast majority of skyscrapers do come without foxes.
It's true, except for flying foxes, which are a whole other nuisance.
The animal centre in Wellington was the one who basically gave the fox a quick once over after he'd been found, and said, "We explained to him that if foxes were meant to be 72 stories off the ground, they would have evolved wings."
Well, some of them have. We call them flying foxes.
Not actually flying foxes.
Well, they're called flying foxes.
Yeah, but flying fish, you don't see them flying around in the air.
Yeah, you do.
Well, not like properly. It's just like a little bit above the water. That's not flying, that's falling with style.
Oh, where are you going to draw the line? I mean, if you take an albatross, a huge albatross, and told it to circle the globe 10 times, it wouldn't be able to make it. So you have to say, okay, if you can fly a bit, you're a flying whatever you are. And so flying fish, yeah, okay, they can only make 2 or 3 meters max. But they're still flying. You shouldn't say that they're not flying creatures. They're birds, really.
Are we going to start calling Jonathan Edwards, the triple jumper, I think he was, a bird because of his long-distance triple jumps?
Well, yeah.
He does reclassify just some subset of the human species just to birds because they're the ones that can jump quite far. What about parachutists?
You could have like a yearly checkup. Like, are you a bird? Can you jump this far?
Would you get like tax breaks for being a bird or something?
Probably. I mean, I guess
you use a bit less wear and tear on public pavements.
You probably get also pay cuts though. You have to work for chicken feed.
Ah. But yes, and it's a nice story in that it basically has very little effect on anything everywhere other than allowing people to put nice photos of foxes in newspapers.
It's sort of the ideal in the distraction from the problems of the real world.
Yeah. Although I'm sure we could possibly touch on some of those problems in some of the later stories.
Shall I say liberation of Arab countries?
You can say that. That's one we're not going to be covered because it's kind of hard to be funny about.
That's true.
But we'll be back here with some more lightly entertaining things to distract you from the more serious things, which are all very worthy and you should be thinking about lots, just not for this one particular hour on Sunday. And if you've got any comments about the story of cute foxes being found at the top of skyscrapers, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk or going onto our website www.camfm.co.uk, clicking on the web form there and sending us a message. We'll be back with more stories just after this.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
You're listening to Burst the Bubble on Cam FM, and that was The Killers with Mr. Brightside. We're going to be moving on to some more news stories, and going on from an urban fox at the top of a skyscraper, we've got another animal found in a slightly unusual location, possibly even more unusual than the fox the fox in the skyscraper.
So this is keeping in with the theme of fuzzy, cuddly animals, with an alligator. I believe it was a particularly fuzzy and cuddly kind of alligator that was found not in a skyscraper, as one might expect from the context, but actually behind a sofa.
Yeah, a woman in Brazil was shocked to find the 1.5-meter-long alligator behind a sofa. They could have measured it afterwards. I'm not sure that measuring alligators is precisely the first thing that you think to do when you see them.
Yeah, what you just said kind of implied that she was shocked to find the 1.5-meter alligator. Probably wouldn't have been that surprised if it had been 1.4 or 1.6 meters. I'm not sure that's true.
No, she was shocked to find an alligator which happened to be 5 foot long.
Oh, is that how long 1.5 meters is?
About, yeah. Pretty much.
Gosh.
But the brilliant thing is how she found this alligator. She said, the woman said she was alerted to the reptile's presence by her 3-year-old son, who was patting its head. This alligator was behind the sofa.
So it's lucky that they don't watch Doctor Who then, presumably. Or the son would have been, you know, munched.
Well, the son was already there patting the alligator on the head. Like, what was? Did the son like fall down the back of the sofa or something?
Well, let's imagine that they're watching Doctor Who and something especially scary happens just as the alligator's yawning. So the son would sort of run behind the sofa straight into the alligator's open mouth, and you know that would be quite a tragedy.
Yeah,
behind the sofa should be a safe space.
Perhaps that's why the kid was there, being scared of something like Doctor Who. I'm not sure Doctor Who is all that watched in Brazil. It might be, I don't know.
No, it's a good question. So the story goes on to talk about the firefighter who says that the firefighter captain said it could have seriously hurt or even killed the boy. It's nice to know that firefighters are the experts to whom, like, the news outlets turn in this situation.
Yeah. Normally in this situation, it's not like someone from the Society for the Protection of Alligators.
Well, there's no such society for alligators. Foxes, yes, but no one wants to protect the alligators.
I think we should protect the alligators from unfounded accusations of, well, anything that they're accused of unfoundedly.
It's true. Alligators should be innocent until proven guilty, and they should have to go through the judicial system like everywhere else.
Apparently, finding animals such as alligators and snakes in people's houses in towns in that area isn't uncommon because of the nearby rivers and rainforests. But he said the reptile had been released in a less populated area of the town.
Again, this is exactly the same problem as with the fox. Like, if I saw someone in a van drive up and release a fox on my street in London, I would be relatively irritated. If I saw them drive up and release an alligator onto my street, I would be livid. I would walk over there, and then I would walk away again because they'd have an alligator. But I would write a strongly worded letter to the local papers.
I just mean, like, they'd have an alligator like it was a trained alligator, like a trained attack alligator.
Well, would it be better if they had a wild alligator? I mean, at least they could control a tame alligator.
Oh, perhaps that's how they should spin it. They should say, okay, people in this area, we've bought you a trained attack alligator that will patrol your streets at night. And
thanks,
and
firefighters. Just what I always wanted from you as a public servant, a trained attack alligator.
Less populated that area of the town. Let's hope it's not going to be even less populated.
At least it'll probably be less populated by the foxes or something. I mean, because alligators eat foxes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Who would win in the fight between a fox and an alligator? And the obvious answer is alligator.
Yeah, it's
not exactly a fair matchup.
True.
How many foxes would you need to fight an alligator?
So, it depends if foxes can coordinate, because they're related to dogs, aren't they? And so, are they a pack animal?
Vaguely.
So maybe a pack of foxes could take down an alligator?
Yeah, I suppose. The one in Farthing Wood that definitely could, but that's just because it's Farthing Wood.
So it looks like we're getting some messages that I don't quite follow. Could you explain them, Michael?
Some people who know me are waiting for a whoop. So here's a whoop.
I think they're actually waiting for a whoop.
Yes, that's not very news related, is it?
It's a good point.
Moving on to our next news story, which is news related. We've got a ban of leather footballs in a school in an area of Merseyside, Malvern Primary School in Huyton. Only allowed sponge footballs now.
Right. So when I first read the story, I assumed that these footballs were actually a ban on the old 70s style footballs. Do you remember them, or have you ever seen them in videos?
I don't think so.
Okay, so footballs used to be basically constructed like a light cricket ball. I'm not sure they ever had wood in them, but they were definitely very thick leather, to the extent that heading the ball would actually significantly injure you, which is why now we have these very light footballs, very inflated ones. And so when I read this story, I assumed that they meant they've banned the 30, 40-year-old brain-damaging footballs. And I thought, well, good on them. That sounds like a sensible thing to do. The real question is, why do these kids have these antique footballs? But if they're just banning regular footballs and making them kick around sponges, I'm not really sure that I approve.
A children's anti-obesity charity, the Child Growth Foundation, has criticised the policy, saying children must be exposed to risk to learn, which means that, I don't think they're exposed to risk pretty very much in schools. I think that's a problem. I think is this what we need? More risk in schools? Kind of like razor blades hidden in textbooks or something, so in order for them to, if they're not exposed to risk, how can they be expected to learn?
It's a pretty creepy position to defend, really. We must expose these children to risks. Sounds like you're just going to drop them in a pit and they can fight their way out or they can't.
I know, it's kind of like a game. Like you're just saying, the ones who are best at learning will survive the pit of doom, and those are the ones that will be able to go on and get nice intellectual desk jobs. But everyone else who gets mauled in the pit of doom, we then take them out of the pit of doom and put them in another pit where they're just going to perform menial tasks. And this isn't an education policy I want to see.
No, I mean, and definitely not experience.
Yeah. Well, I'd hope that I wouldn't be experiencing it having graduated from uni.
Well, you can never tell. I mean, if someone was insane enough to put a pit of doom into a school, would you really expect them to be sane enough to not expect mid-20-year-olds to participate in education policy? On the other hand, if you are hiring for a job and you have two CVs in front of you, and one of them says, played with sponge balls as a child, and the other one said, survived pit of doom, like, which would you take?
Yeah, it'd be the pit of doom.
Yeah.
It would be.
Although, only if you had no more suited candidates that had, you know, education beyond primary school.
Yes. The other possibility is, they must be exposed to risk as in the board game.
Well, I was exposed to risk at a very young age.
and did it mean that you learnt?
I learnt how to play Risk.
Do you have a key strategy for playing Risk?
Occupy Australia and backstab in Europe.
Okay, have you applied that to your everyday life?
Well, once I was in Australia, and I tried to not leave, but then apparently that's illegal to overstay your visa, so that didn't work. But I'm doing pretty well in Europe.
Okay, we'll move on from there, I think. But no, I remember as a kid being hit by leather footballs several times. I'm hoping not, most of them weren't deliberate. I'm pretty sure one or two of them were, but then that, okay. Some kids are just like that.
Some, most leather footballs are just created entirely by accident, but some are deliberate.
No, okay, getting hit by them by accident.
Ah.
But no, and I'm not sure whether I would count it necessarily as a learning experience, apart from getting a football to the face actually hurts. And I'm not sure that's a valuable life lesson. But on the other hand, I'm not convinced that having SpongeBall instead would have improved my childhood.
Well, maybe SpongeBalls could be picked up and, you know, used as abrasive sponges against someone's skin. Children are cruel. They're going to find ways to hurt each other with these things. You could give them, like, the essence of pure happiness, and all that they would do
is drown people in it.
Yeah. Or solidify it and beat them around the head.
But
they should just give them the razor blades, and let whoever comes out alive can have the job.
But no pit.
No pit, no.
Is that the bit that you're singling out for being cruel and unusual?
Well, yeah.
Specifically the pit.
Some children are afraid of depths.
So that there you go. If you've got any comments about how to teach children and how to keep them safe from the dreaded leather footballs, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk or via the website www.camfm.co.uk. Moving on, just before another musical break, we're going from schools to, well, Covent Garden, which is possibly the weirdest segue that I've ever done, and possibly even more weird when you consider the topic here is that a restaurant in London's Covent Garden is serving a new dessert called Baby Gaga, which is made with human milk.
Yeah, it raises several questions in my mind, because it reminds me of those basically seafood restaurants where you get to go in, you get to look at the lobster that you're about to kill, and then you get to kill it, and then you eat the lobster. Now, this reminds me precisely of this situation in the following way. I would rather probably meet the person whose breast milk I was about to ingest and just check that they, say, weren't a smoker or weren't, like, insanely homicidal or, you know, weren't an alien from outer space or something. I'd shake them by the hand, ask their name, and say, okay, now I'm marginally less uncomfortable drinking milk from your mammary glands.
They do say that they have health checks for the lactating women, and they're the same used by hospitals to screen blood donors. So I'd hope that hospitals screening blood donors would tend to reject any aliens, although I don't think they manage to pick up homicidal maniacs.
It's true. Homicidal maniacs generally avoid blood donation, except in the more direct way.
I'm sure there's a plot of a, like, I don't know, some sort of TV show with cops and stuff where someone kills people after meeting them at a blood donation session or something.
I think it's called Blade 2.
That has vampires in it as well. That doesn't count.
And zombies.
Zombies as well. I've not seen Blade 2. I've seen the first one.
I think it's the one where the vampires fight the zombies.
But the first woman to do this, a Mrs. Hiley, gets £15 for every 10 ounces of milk she donates to the company. That's not donating milk. That's selling milk.
Yeah.
She says it's a great recession beater and says, what's the harm in using my assets for a bit of extra cash?
You know, you added the emphasis assets there.
Yeah, that's a word I've picked up on, because it's not unusual use of that word here, I don't think. But it's so close to a common use of that word.
I actually support them selling this. I think it's great that we're open enough and free enough to say there is nothing wrong with this. We eat eggs from chickens we don't know. We can eat ice cream from women we don't know. I think if people ended up, like, losing an arm in an accident, I think they should be allowed to go and sell that to, like, a restaurant in London. And we wouldn't need to know them either. I support all of those things equally.
Okay. How would you envision the arm being cooked? I can't, would arms be very nice? I don't know.
Well, I was just trying to think of a non-fatal extremity. Maybe legs would be better.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I can't imagine human meat would. I don't know why I think that. It just seems that humans don't particularly strike me as the right sort of shape to have good meat on them.
Apparently, we taste like...
chicken. Everything tastes like chicken.
An unpleasant version of pig.
An unpleasant version of pig. So all the people now who hate bacon and ham will just be going, surely that the unpleasant version of pig is pig.
I'm not sure where I'm remembering this from, but I think that human meat is supposed to taste like badly smoked pork.
Okay. Obviously we'd tend to cook it, season it, perhaps marinate it. I mean, in this case, the milk is pasteurized and then churned with Madagascan vanilla pods and lemon zest, which all sounds pretty nice. That's what you have in an ice cream. But then the worrying bit is served with a rusk. Yep, that's fine. Obviously, they're going for the baby theme. And an optional shot of Calpol or Bongella.
I'm not really sure what that is.
Calpol is basically kid medicine.
And Bongella?
And Bongella is a kind of cream for like mouth ulcers and stuff.
Right. So they expect their customer base to be unusually afflicted with oral sores.
I don't know. It's just really weird. Just the idea of having something which is supposed to be medicinal being added. I mean, up until that point, I was fine with it. And then it's like, and here's your Calpol.
Well, I do quite like Calpol. It's quite tasty.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that the just like getting people to appreciate some medicine in their food.
Maybe it's meant to be so that you'd have the medicine first and you're like, ugh, medicine. I want something like to cheer me up, like ice cream.
We're going to start going singing Mary Poppins songs at this rate.
Did she ever?
No.
No.
No. A spoonful of sugar helps medicine go down, perhaps. I don't know. Breast milk ice cream helps Calpol or Bongella go down or whatever.
We can but hope.
Okay. If you've got any comments on any of the stories that we've been covering, you can get in touch with us. Would you eat breast milk ice cream? That's what I'm interested in.
I think I would. Oh. I think I would feel more comfortable meeting the person beforehand. But I think I would be okay with that.
Yeah, if you would or you wouldn't, please get in touch with us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or by going to our website, www.camfm.co.uk, and clicking on the web form there. We'll be back with yet more strange news stories after this short musical interlude.
On air, online and across Cambridge.
Your station,
your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of All on Cam FM. That was A Law on Dance by Stromae. And we're going on to a more technological themed set of stories now. Starting with a robot marathon in Osaka, Japan, which was won by RoboV PC.
So RoboV is apparently a knee-high humanoid robot, which I find really interesting, because as far as I was aware, most walking robots were sort of a spider-like design or a dog-like design.
Yeah, I get the impression that this robot marathon was meant to be human-like designs. Did you ever watch, I think it was Techno Games or something, where they had a walking robot race, and there was one which looked like it had been made out of Lego that actually kept winning?
No, I didn't. I did see a robot dog, which was very exciting, which is a robot which is mimicking how dogs walk. And so they make it walk across all these different surfaces, including ice. And watching it walk across sheet ice, it slips at one point and staggers exactly like a dog would stagger. It's very exciting to watch. I really recommend looking that up.
Oh, well, there's something for you to all go and look up on YouTube after the show. But this story, RoboV PC crossed the finish line just a second before its closest rival, which is RoboV PC Lite. Which I assume is very, very similar.
Perhaps it's a lighter weight, I suppose, but it doesn't really tell us this new story.
No. But after more than 2 days of racing, that's how long it took them to go through the 26-mile race. It was 423 laps of an indoor track, an average speed of 0.77 kilometres an hour, which isn't which is really not very fast.
It kind of puts Terminator in perspective, because all of the segments when Arnold Schwarzenegger was on a motorcycle, yeah, he was quite fast. As soon as he went into, say, a hospital to track down Sarah Connor, or whatever the child's name was in the second one, who knows?
John Connor.
We'll never know. It's not recorded. They could essentially just run away out of the other side, and Arnold Schwarzenegger would have to walk very slowly and dramatically towards them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, basically, they should have just run into a forest, say, where Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been unable to use his motorcycle, and then it would have all been fine.
Yeah. Obviously not. They weren't thinking outside the box enough, which is understandable, given they were being chased by a killer ant.
Well, I think that's the time when you should think the hardest.
Yeah, but it's not easy to think. It's been demonstrated that it's hard to think when you're under time pressure. And when you've got...
They weren't under time pressure. He was running at 0.77 kilometres an hour.
I think he was going slightly faster than that. That's about 0.5 miles per hour, I believe, if I've done the conversion right. Which means it is still nearly 20 times as fast as a garden snail.
To put that in perspective, I think human walking pace is about 8 miles an hour.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So if you're doing a decent walking pace, yeah.
So a relatively energetic walking pace would have been enough to escape from the Terminator, given today's current technologies.
Yeah. how fast was Arnie going in that? I don't know. Human is about human running is about 20 nearly 28 miles per hour, apparently.
So that's what 10 times 6. So that's 60 times as fast as the Terminator.
Yeah. And the Terminator probably runs out of batteries, whereas the key thing about humans running is that this is how we manage to capture and domesticate horses and stuff, is that humans just keep going. Humans are the Duracell bunny of the animal kingdom.
Yeah, horses run very fast over relatively short distances, don't they?
Yeah, but humans will just keep tracking an animal and can do so for days and outrun it, and the animal will just keep... Oh, crikey, they're still coming. And the human will go, hello, stab. Not exactly like that. That'd be a really bad way of capturing an animal. Go, hello, stab.
Early attempts at domesticating horses ended up with a lot of dead horses.
Yes.
Maybe we shouldn't stab them. Shut up. Stab.
I like the fact that the robots actually, after they'd finished this race, getting back to the actual news story from just deciding what would happen in human-animal domestication. After the tight finish, both of these robots waved their arms and bowed to an enthusiastic crowd of clapping spectators. So they've got they're at least mimicking in some sense our athletes.
Right. I do wonder whether or not that was entirely necessary for the running section of the race.
How much time do you reckon they actually spent programming the don't fall over when you bow routine compared to the run the marathon routine?
I would guess 2 years in programmer time.
It's programmer time dog years or something.
Seems 7 times longer. Also, you have to work late and eat pizza.
And drink coffee from my Komsky friends.
Yep.
But said programmers were allowed to change the robot's batteries and motors during the race, but if the robots fell, they had to get up themselves.
So that doesn't actually say that operators were allowed to change their own robot's batteries or all robots' batteries, which, you know, to my mind, just calls to mind an entire room full of Japanese engineers falling over all of each other, trying to replace dead batteries with live batteries and getting mixed up and walking into each other. And then the robots decide they don't want their batteries changed and run away. And then they win the race by accident because one of them's self-aware. And it's kind of a parable about how being self-aware helps you win races rather than just being a robot that runs fast.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that is a lesson that we will all take from this.
Well, I think that's the plot of the film. This is a film, right? This isn't really a news story.
No, a news story.
Oh, wow. We can make robots now?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently humanoid ones. Although, to be honest, looking at them, they're not very humanoid. They're kind of like humanoid. When you start to learn to draw, you have to start by learning to draw simple geometric shapes and then work on drawing multiple of those shapes to form the outline of a person or whatever. And it looks like they've started doing that, but the only geometric shapes that they can really draw are pretty much cuboids.
Or robots. I think they can draw robots.
Yeah, but the cuboids make up the robots. The head's not a cuboid.
If you subdivide each robot into cuboids, you get cuboids.
Yeah. And if you, well, rather than like subdividing bits of people where you get ovals and the like.
Yeah, you wouldn't buy these robots a drink.
No. But, although, that's a bit mean. If they've just raced a marathon, they could probably use one.
Right. I more meant in a social setting.
That's fair enough. Moving on, we're keeping with the themes of technology and going to Egypt. So this is something that is very tenuously related to the events in the Arab world, where a young Egyptian dad has apparently dubbed his newborn daughter Facebook in honour of the role the social network played in deposing Hosni Mubarak.
Can I just read out the actual headline there? Egyptian bloke dubs Sprog Facebook.
Yeah, this is somewhat of an irreverent news site.
Right.
I wouldn't generally call someone a sprog.
No. I think that's actually fairly positive. I mean, well, I was actually about to veer into politics there, wasn't I?
I don't know. I'm sure you can say that, like, yeah, that's nice that they've overthrown a dictator. And then Facebook helped in some small way and got rewarded in some sense.
So can we think of another, like, a parallel from history in which a dictator was overthrown before social media? Like, can we think of any parallel from then? So, for example, were there any French children running around called Guillotine?
I don't know. Was after the infamous thing, going back to the theme of marathons, after the marathon run to bring back news of the battle, did anyone get called Marathon?
I think they named a chocolate bar after it.
that was slightly time delayed, though. That wasn't.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't connected. It probably was, though.
Oh yeah, that's sort of like tenuously technology-related story that's kind of like nice and life-affirming. Someone celebrating their freedom by giving someone a name which might either bring them great popularity or get them ridiculed. It's one or the other. There's not really much middle ground in that case, is there?
So apparently in Central America, a lot of boys are being called America as a first name because it's got this amazing social and technological reputation and so on, and it's got this really high profile, despite America being a girl's name. It's a female ending.
I actually remember we had a story a while back which had some French people complaining about the Renault Clio, I think it was, because... Oh, no, it wasn't Renault Clio. It was a new one that was going to come out by Renault that had a girl's name as the name of the car, and they were complaining about that. But here we've got almost precisely the opposite. Someone deliberately naming their kid after a product, basically.
Well, wasn't there already a kid called Coca-Cola?
What about
the Beckhams? They named their kid after a record company. I think it was Apple.
They did?
Yeah, they called their kid Apple.
Did they?
Yep.
I think you're getting confused with someone else.
I thought, okay.
I think there was some famous celebrity that named their kid Apple. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't the Beckhams.
Okay.
But, yeah, anyway, I think that's enough naming.
Yeah, well, all famous people look the same to me.
Fair enough. And one final technology story. The head of England's exam watchdog has said that we shouldn't be taking exams on paper, they should all be on computers, because that's all that people use these days. No one ever writes anything down, ever.
Well, yeah, I can't remember the last time I actually saw a paper. You know, I just used my Star Trek pad.
Yep. Your Star Trek pad.
You know, the little bleepy things that they used to write on that show.
Yeah, I'm sure I can see that happening in the future, but not quite yet.
No. I mean, how on earth would you do like any mathematics exam without teaching the children how to typeset mathematical formulae?
Oh god, that's horrible. I've tried.
It's an insane thing to ask of an A-level student. It's completely unnecessary when you can just use pen and paper.
Yeah, I think the time is not yet here for this sea change.
I can imagine it being useful in essays, so I can type much faster than I can write.
Then you start getting into fairness, don't you? For exams.
Yeah.
That's going to be a minefield.
Did you never practice writing fast before your exams? Just kind of limber up a little bit.
A little bit, not like seriously. Mostly I practice not being an illegible scrawl.
Yeah, I never got that one.
That's a harder one, but that could be the thing. Every year there are things about make A levels and GCSEs harder. So perhaps the way they make them harder is by making sure that they can't use computers at all, and it all has to be done by hand.
Well, currently they can't use computers.
Well, yeah, but in the future, when this comes out, when we've changed into computers, they can change back.
So you're saying that we should change to computers because it's the future, and then change back because the little kids should have it tough?
I'm just bitter that I never got to take any exams on computer, I think.
So I've taken multiple choice exams. Have you ever taken the GRE, the American thing?
No.
So there's a multiple choice exam for that, and that works okay. I mean, it works relatively okay, because the only thing you have to do is either take multiple choice questions or write an essay, at least in the version I took. I really can't see this being applicable to things where the answer itself is part of the answer.
That's very clear. The answer itself is part of the answer.
Well, think about art exams or drama exams or music exams or maths exams or physics exams where you have to draw a diagram.
Yeah. That would be a pain on computer.
French exams where you have to have the accents in the right place, or it changes the meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I think it's an intriguing idea, but one which is not yet ready for the world.
The
world is not yet ready. So sorry. Maybe next time. I grade that suggestion a D.
Maybe next... Wait, maybe next time? Maybe next time what?
I don't know.
Like, maybe next radio show? Maybe next decade? Maybe next time we have a civilization? What?
I don't know. I said that without thinking. And there we have the problem. This is what... Just people staring at computers, which seems to be a lot of what I do these days. What leads you? People saying things without thinking, whereas you've got to write it down. You look at it and go, you're writing it down and going, I'm writing complete rubbish. But then, yeah.
I like the way you said that. Like it was almost a pleasure that was forbidden. Like, I am writing complete rubbish. And I know that that's wrong, and it's so good.
And it's wasting paper.
And ink. And time.
Yeah, but okay. Maybe in the future, rather than maybe next time. I was just assuming the off-qual head just only got to announce things like this every so often. So maybe in 5 years' time. I don't know.
Okay, maybe in 5 years' time.
And if you've got any comments on any of the stories so far, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk or via the web form www.camfm.co.uk, and we'll be back with a couple of more news stories after our final musical break.
Your city,
your station,
your Cam FM.
And that was Handlebars by the Flowbots. You're listening to Bursts of Bubble on Cam FM. And now we've had a couple of emails that we're going to go through. We've had Brian saying that he took all of his law school essay exams on computers, and there was in fact one older student in one of the classes who was about 45 years old who was a bit miffed that he couldn't type as fast as everyone else.
So do you know what your typing speed is?
I don't know. I think it's reasonable.
Mine's about 90. Ooh. Apparently, which is
90 what? High. Just 90?
90 words a minute.
It's like, mine's 90. And we've also had another email from Brian saying that he would try human milk ice cream, but he'd think he'd be more uncomfortable with it if he didn't meet the person first. So
maybe they could take like one of the firing squad tactics. So, you know, in a firing squad, all but one of the bullets is a blank, so none of the soldiers feel guilty about killing people.
Oh, I didn't know that, but it seems to vaguely make sense.
Okay, so imagine if you met all of the people whose breast milk you might potentially be about to drink.
Yeah.
Then maybe you'd be like, they were all nice people, and I don't feel awkward because I don't know which of them actually contributed. Maybe that would be a way around that.
Nice idea. And also another email from Brian, who's just been dominating our email list, it seems. He said that he can't remember which tribe, but he read somewhere that's a cannibalistic tribe somewhere called Human Meat Long Pig, because of this similarity to take the taste of pig.
Maybe we heard that from the same place. I can't remember either.
Moving quickly on, because we've only got a few minutes left of the show, we have got our anthology of marginal interest, which are the stories that we're just going to briefly skip over. We've got the Indian government saying that Indian weddings have got too big, and it's not on when all the poor are facing increasing costs of flour, onions and basics, and people are having elaborate millions of pounds wedding ceremony.
That's, I guess, pretty socially conscious.
Yeah, or people are going, the government shouldn't be telling us this, but I know, but fair enough. It's one of the things that you don't immediately think about when you hear about wheat prices going up, that this is going to affect weddings.
Yeah, I mean, there must be a lot of weddings if the weddings are affecting the wheat prices.
Yeah, well, perhaps there are. Perhaps it's just a very happy time at the moment.
Great.
Yeah. Moving on. Staff at the Grant Museum found half a dodo in one of their drawers. That's basically it. They've actually just found the remaining bones from half a dodo.
You know, I was in the Horniman Museum in London on Saturday, and they had a merman where which was touted as a real specimen of a merman that lived in the sea in Asia, and eventually they found out that it was half a monkey sewn to half a fish. But it took them 10 years to realise that it wasn't a real specimen.
Wow, that's quite a long time. This one, apparently the dodo, was with a mass of crocodile bones, because apparently they're quite similar.
My bet would be that they were initially sewn together, like this merman. So it was like...
I was talking about the dodo then.
A flying crocodile.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what we're seeing.
Yeah, to go with your flying fox.
Yeah. Flying crocodiles are very, very dangerous in Brazil.
Yeah, they don't hide behind the sofa. They, in fact, just come down from above the sofa.
And swoop in and carry you off in their crocodile jaws.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether or not you're watching Doctor Who in that case, because you just have to be watching something. Yeah, so, yeah, there you go.
Okay, so...
One last email from Ryan, quickly, is that typing essay exams is pretty common in American law schools. They've got special software that locks you out of any other program, so you can't pull up your notes or Wikipedia.
Probably wise.
I'd assume that would be implemented here, although, yeah. What if there was a bug in the program?
Well, yeah, also, if it's in every school, you're going to have to use the school's own computers to do this, and so that gives students a chance to... like introduce a virus beforehand, and so then you could have like a special key combination that would let you get out of the locked program.
We're going into like the Kobayashi Maru, which is in Star Trek, where Kirk cheated the impossible test getting in and hacking it beforehand.
Yeah,
I like that. Captain Kirk inspiring children hundreds of years into the past.
Yeah, I bet if after your German exam, you went, your teacher tells you, how did you master the past tense so quickly? It's impossible. And you turn around and say, I don't believe in impossible. Also, I cheated. I don't think you're going to be held up as a moral moral paradigm.
Paradigm?
Yeah.
Paragon?
No, I meant paradigm.
You yourself are a paradigm, a way of thinking.
A paradigm of morality. Do I mean that?
I don't know. I thought you meant paragon, which is like the uppermost sort of like shining example.
No, I did mean paradigm, but I think I used it in the wrong sense. Okay. Sorry.
Someone who might be a paradigm or a paragon of morality is a 7-year-old Plymouth Argyle fan who's chipped in to help the club, which has millions of pounds worth of debt, possibly, and have been issued with a winding up order. Oh, no, sorry, they've just got some debt. It doesn't say how much debt. I just assumed millions of pounds, because that's the most common amount of debt, it seems, in these stories. And he's given all of his savings to his beloved football club, all 53p of it.
So that's quite a sweet story.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's horrible in the fact that it's basically not going to help at all.
Well, I could criticise the child for only saving 53p, but I won't. I have nothing to criticise about this story.
And at the other end of the scale, someone else who might be morally good is a worker, an engineer. We paid £2 million, which accidentally got paid to him by his employer.
So the employee opened up his payslip to find his bosses had given him 1,000 times the normal sum, which, I don't know, it sounds like he paid in the check and then paid it back, rather than just going and saying, hey, this check is wrong.
Well, like payslips, you get even one if you don't, if the money goes straight into your account.
Oh, I see, a payslip.
Not a check.
See,
it'd be harder to write out a check for £2 million by accident.
I'm living in the past, yes. Yeah.
And, yeah, sadly, that's all we've got time for. So,
Can we predict next week's headlines?
Oh, only if you're very quick. Go on.
Snorkels, new in thing, say, Labour Party.
Well, thank you very much. I've been Michael.
And I've been CJ.
Thank you very much and good night.